Welcome back to the Pause, Rewind, Play podcast. We're thrilled to be back here on another episode. I'll be your host today in the absence of Casey. I'm Josh, and we've got Vince here.
Yo, what's going on? We also got two dogs crawling around, if you guys can see it.
This yes. If you can.
They both need all the love today.
Krampus was our last episode in the Christmas season. We had a lot of fun there, but now we're into the new year. We're into 2024. Everyone's got their new goals and new everything. But you know what time it is, Vince. It's my favorite time of year. It's award season.
Yeah, it's starting.
We've already had the Golden Globes. And one of the stars of the movie we're talking about today is now Golden Globe winner Jeremy Allen White.
He won it.
For the Bear. Ayo Edebiri as well. Mm-hmm. So incredible stuff going on there.
Heck yeah.
There's so much more to come. Oscar nominations are being announced. I don't know when we'll put this out, but from the date that we're recording it, in about 10 days.
That's what's coming up.
Yes, I think it's the 21st of January. And I'm super, super excited. And we will get into it. But just like Ayo Edebiri's letterboxed review of this movie that we're doing today, Candle Circle, Zac Efron Oscar nomination for The Iron Claw is starting. Last year, you know, I had my Stephanie Hsu hope and dream. And that was what I, you know, sacrificed all of my everything to the movie gods for, and it worked.
And it happened.
So this year it's the Zac Efron Best Actor nomination.
I would love that.
That's what I'm sacrificing everything for. But Vince, how have you been, man? It's been a little bit since we talked. You been doing? What you been watching?
I missed the Golden Globes. I didn't watch it. I don't really prioritize it. I honestly forgot it was even happening the night it was going on. I got a text from my mom and she's like, "Do you watch the Golden Globes?" I was like, "Not usually." She's like, "Okay, I was just wondering if I should tonight." And I'm like, "I mean, why not? You know, it's kind of fun to watch the celebrities do their thing." But I was busy, so I never got around to it. But I did listen to a podcast about the winners and everything, and I'm so happy to hear that The Bear just killed it. Mm-hmm. Like, so happy about that one. Other than that, yeah, just staying busy. I haven't watched a ton since we recorded last. I did watch a movie last night or the night before. I think it was last night. Have you heard of Leo on Netflix?
The lizard. Adam Sandler.
Yeah,
sorry.
It's Adam Sandler and Bill Burr. And Adam Sandler and a couple of other guys wrote the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard anything about it?
I've seen like the trailers for it on Netflix and stuff, but I haven't watched
it. I hadn't even seen a trailer. I literally just heard that someone told me that this is the exact words they used. They told me it's genuinely funny. And I was like, really? Like, that's like a way that someone, you know, no one's ever told me a movie like genuinely funny. Everyone's saying like, yeah, it's a funny movie, you know, but they're just like very like the wording that they chose made me be like, what does that mean?
What does genuinely that mean? Especially funny. Like, you've got an Adam Sandler movie. That man has done so many comedy movies at this time. You think there'd got to be recycled material or just some of the same old.
And a lot of his movies recently have been like it's called like Hubie Halloween. Man.
Oh my gosh, we don't talk about Hubie Halloween in this household.
Like, so Adam Sandler is hit and miss. I did put on Coneheads the other day. I don't know if you ever heard of Coneheads.
I haven't watched it, but I know
it's an old like SNL skit, the Coneheads thing, and they made a movie and I loved it when I was a kid. And so I put it on in the background the other day just kind of like for fun. It doesn't hold up as an adult very well, but it was very nostalgic for me, and all the like classic SNL cast show up in it, you know. And
nice.
At one point Adam Sandler shows up there and I'm just like in this I just miss young Adam Sandler, you know. So anyway, we put on Leo last night, and dude, I laughed a lot in that movie.
Yeah,
the visual gags in it are just like,
it's animated, right?
Yeah, it's an animated movie and the animation's not that great. Like, it's not like the most like visually amazing movie, you know. It's not like even a Pixar standards, but like the visual gags that they used throughout the whole thing. First off, the story is very heartwarming and it's a good lesson for kids, you know, and everything, but they just packed the movie with visual gags through the whole thing that just every time made me laugh. Like, it takes place in a school, and every time you see like the little kindergartners, they're just like these buck-eyed, like crazy, like manic, like little kids running around like chaos. And they do it multiple times throughout the movie and it never got old every time you see the little kindergartners, you know? So it's just like one visual gag after the next with like a heartwarming story and a good lesson for kids, you know, about being yourself and finding someone to that you can talk to so that you can like become a better person. And it's about like an old lizard sharing his wisdom that he's learned over the last like 75 years of his life, you know, mm-hmm. and improving other people's lives. It was just, it was a genuinely funny movie.
That's an interesting wording. I think I should go watch this movie now, Vince.
Yeah, so check it out. It's really, really good. I miss Adam Sandler. I need to watch more of his stuff. I still haven't seen like Uncut Gems, or some of his like bigger stuff. I haven't watched Murder Mystery 2, but I liked the first Murder Mystery fine. You know,
I haven't seen the first one either.
They're fine. Like, I like Adam Sandler. Like, he's just a funny guy.
Adam Sandler's definitely always fun.
He's got another one that he did with his kids, his little girls, his daughters.
Oh yeah,
recently too. It's like, you're not invited to my bar mitzvah.
You're definitely not invited to my like that. Yeah,
which I heard was really good too. So I'll probably watch that one at some point. Like, I'm on this Adam Sandler kick right now. Apparently, nice. That I didn't realize I was on.
Well, now you are. Yeah. Well, that one especially, I'll probably take a look at sometime, because me and Jaleesa a lot of times will struggle to find something that we both want to watch, mm-hmm. right? I've got my stuff that I want to watch, you know, a lot of films, 2023 movies, which is most of what I've been watching lately, that are a lot more dramatic and like kind of award season stuff, yep. etc. And she's like, let's watch this Disney movie from 40 years ago. And I'm just like, really? I'm not really about that anymore. Like, I'm just not interested. Like, what was it? The other one that we watched that there's a lot of those older Disney movies. We'll watch them, and I'm like, yes, it's good, and I liked it, but it's just, like, not what I was in the mood for, mm-hmm. right? And there are some that are just terrible. And I might, like, get some hate for this.
Yeah, I can't.
You might have seen it on my Letterboxd. Sleeping Beauty. Like, the original Sleeping Beauty. Oh. We watched that the other day. It was terrible.
It was bad.
I hated it. Oh, my gosh. Huh. It was not great.
I don't remember. It's been so long since I've seen it.
And that's the thing.
It's one of my mom's favorite stories to tell. That movie used to scare me as a little kid. I used to hide behind the couch when she turned into the dragon.
Hey, the big dragon. That's crazy. But yeah. There's a lot. That's the thing, is there's a lot to choose from. And so we'll usually struggle to find something we both want. So we'll turn on something like what we're rewatching right now, which is Malcolm in the Middle. We're watching Malcolm in the Middle right now.
I love that show.
I've seen a lot of Malcolm in the Middle, but I've never watched it all the way through beginning to end. Because whenever I watched it, it was just me coming in. She's already watching it. And I would watch it with her. And it's definitely super, super fun. It's crazy. It's hilarious. And it's obviously super great to see Bryan Cranston, mm-hmm. The old days. But I think Dewey's got to be my favorite character, Dewey. Man. Dewey is just hilarious. But Malcolm in the Middle aside, coming back to your point, Leo is probably a good one that I could say, hey, it's this new one with Adam Sandler. And she likes Adam Sandler movies, and it's animated. And
yeah.
But I think it would be funny, too. Like, let's watch it. It's probably one of those.
Yeah. That we could find the middle ground on. If she likes those kind of, like, Disney kids movies kind of a thing. I mean, it's not a Disney movie, but, like, kids movies. But if she's okay with that, she'll like this one, I think.
There we go.
It's good. Check it out.
Appreciate it, Vince. Mm-hmm. All right. I'm going to do a quick run through of what I've been watching, because it's been a lot. Obviously, it's been a little while since we've last talked, but I am prepping for my favorite episode of the year that we do, our top 10 movies. So I've been watching a lot of movies that came out in 2023 and some that came out before then. But The Holdovers, I watched with Cade, which was a great watch. I understand all of the Paul Giamatti praise and love and everything, and all of the awards that are kind of going to it. Mm-hmm. Home Alone, I'll mention super fast for past Christmas, is the first time.
Oh, really?
Crazy, right? I know, like almost never. Surprising. I just never watched it as a kid growing up. I don't know. And I watched it, and it's great, and it was funny. I liked it.
I still have to close my eyes at the freaking nail scene.
Oh, dude.
I can't do that part. The nail in his foot.
It's like a quiet place.
It hurts me just thinking about it. Yeah, exactly.
Closed out the year strong. The very last movie, Letterboxd, they'll put, you know, your first and last movies you watched of the year. My first movie I watched last year was X, the horror movie.
Oh, yeah.
From A24. The very last movie I watched was Poor Things. Yorgos Lanthimos.
Emma Stone.
With Emma Stone.
Mm-hmm. I've heard mixed things about that one. I heard people are even walking out of it. Like,
I mean,
people love it.
I don't doubt that people will walk out of it. It's definitely an artsy movie. I mean, so Yorgos Lanthimos is the director of, like, The Lobster, The Favorite, those, like, really, like, abstract, like, weird stuff. So The Lobster is one. I've probably been recommending it to you for years.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was my number one when we did our A24 episode way back when. I'm pretty sure it was my number one movie then, and Yorgos Lanthimos directed it. But definitely very abstract, very weird. But very, very cool, and there's a lot of different messaging in it. And it also has been, like, because there's, like, kind of what you mentioned, controversial, where some people would walk out a bit. I feel like a casual movie audience obviously wouldn't be super, super into it, where an artsier one would. But even within that, there's kind of some division where there's some people who are saying, hey, it's really good, and it's telling a feminist story and something that's good. And then there's a part of that audience that's like, no, this story isn't feminist. It's like anti-feminism and stuff really? Like that. And so there's a lot of, I mean, from, because I read a lot of like the Letterboxd reviews and just what people are saying on Twitter and stuff. And so there's a lot of controversy, but overall, I think that people have really enjoyed it. It's definitely really good. Willem Dafoe is in it, and he's incredible. Mark Ruffalo as well. It's definitely a solid watch. It's very interesting. There's very sexual themes a lot of times and stuff. And so just, it's a good movie. I liked it a lot. Okay. And no spoilers, but it'll probably be on my top 10.
Nice.
So we can talk about it more then. Dream Scenario, Nicolas Cage, A24 movie. Watched it. Solid. I liked it. Anatomy of a Fall.
These are all the Oscar nominees that I'm going to have to catch up on. I'm going to say,
you'll probably be catching up with me here in a little bit. I know you like watching them. Anatomy of Fall is one that I think that you should check out as well. Definitely an interesting one. I don't know if it's going to be, well, because it won, I think, like best foreign language film at the Golden Globes, okay, which a lot of people are upset about because there's that new movie that just came out on Netflix, but it was technically a 2023 movie. About the plane crash and the Chilean mountains and stuff like that. It's on Netflix now.
Just dropped on Netflix.
Yeah, the snow. I don't remember exactly what it's called. But a lot of people were saying that should win the international feature, and it didn't at the Golden Globes because Anatomy of a Fall won. Anatomy of a Fall takes place in France. The movie is like half in French, half in English. So people, it's like kind of confusing and stuff.
Okay.
And especially if we get to like international feature film, it'll probably be in there as well. A lot of people are thinking that it'll also be in talks for, not like to win Best Picture, but to be a nominee as well.
Okay.
Very interesting story. I'll just not spoil anything. Just it's good. I was really confused about what I was going to get when I was going into it. I didn't know kind of where it was going. And by the end, it's a very thoughtful, very pensive, leaves you thinking afterwards. A lot of discussion can be had with other people about their interpretations of what happened later on. Mm-hmm. So, Anatomy of a Fall. And then I finally watched Thor, Love, and Thunder. And Casey's not here to hear me say it was the most mid-Marvel. Not the most mid. There's so many mid. It was the one of the most mid-Marvel movies I've seen. There were parts that were absolutely hilarious. My Letterboxd review was like, okay, like, not everything was great, but gore, like, coming out of the shadows, I was like, whoa, like, yeah, what's happening gore, there? Right? Like, I've seen a lot of horror movies lately, but that is creepy. There was some good parts. There were parts that I laughed. There were parts that were wild. There were parts that were heartfelt.
There's a lot of hate for that movie out there right now.
That's the thing. It's not terrible. Like
and they're not wrong. They leaned into the commie really, really hard to the point where it's, like, unreal.
Well, and this was also...
It doesn't really fit in kind of the Marvel universe because it's just like, this doesn't make sense in the rules of the rest of the universe.
A lot of what I saw, and I know this is like, you know, a couple years too late now, but a lot of what I saw was people being like, this sounds like the first draft of like what this movie should have been. And instead of keeping it going and refining it, they just went, whoops, yep, okay, like, sounds good. So yeah, anyways, I know that was a lot of what you've been watching, but obviously we're kind of prepping for our movie top 10 of the year coming up on our next episode. So I've been watching a lot, doing a lot. It's been snowing a lot. So
been snowing a ton.
A lot of
that's
time
gonna
spent
be me
home
in the next month. And like as soon as they drop the names of those Oscar movies, and I'm sure they will do what they usually do and start re-releasing the Oscar noms in the theaters.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's how I'll watch a lot of them this year.
Yeah.
Because I have not been keeping up at all.
That's okay.
There's so few of them that I've actually seen.
Well, there's one because you've got Apple TV Plus, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Killers of the Flower Moon, I'm pretty sure, releases.
It's soon.
I think it's tomorrow. It's this weekend, I'm pretty sure. Okay. Releases on Apple TV Plus, so that'll be one that'll
start there. Which is a bummer. I'd rather see it in the theater. Maybe they'll re-release it.
If they do.
I saw they're re-releasing Oppenheimer
mm-hmm.
In IMAX again, so maybe they'll do
that.
That
is one I would go see, even though I've seen it before, because the IMAX experience of Oppenheimer is just
big. So, and that one just won a bunch of Golden Globes too, right? So I'll bet you they will do kind of the same thing with some of these other ones.
Yeah.
If not, I'll find a way to watch them. I'll be prepped. I'll be prepped for our Oscar pod.
He'll be ready.
Ready to lose again.
Hey, man. All right. So with...
Yeah, when did you go see Iron Claw?
So...
Has it been a minute for you too?
It has been a minute, but I went again.
Okay.
So I went... That was... When I texted you... So today, for when recording, this is Thursday. And Vince and I were thinking about doing it on Tuesday. Monday night, I went again because it had already been a week. Because I went and I saw it on New Year's, right? I didn't have work, was sitting around the house, just cleaning, doing nothing. I said, hey, let's go see a movie. I'd seen Poor Things like a couple days before. And then I was like, oh, let's go see The Iron Claw. And I went and I saw it. It was great. We said we're going to do the podcast about it. There's been too many times where, like Krampus, the last episode, I watched it like, I think it was even just 4 or 5 days before. But then even then, I was like finding myself forgetting things and I didn't know. So I was like, oh. So I went and I saw it again on Monday. So my memory is still pretty fresh and I have a lot of notes.
Perfect. Okay. I'm about a week out-ish since I saw it, but I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
I hope you jog your memory. No
worries. Yeah, yeah. I'm sure as we talk about it, things will come along.
So The Iron Claw obviously is an A24 movie starring Zac Efron, Jeremy Allen White. You probably already know all of that if you're here, but the biggest thing is that this was one that I was not sure how I was going to feel about it. I did not know much about it going into it other than, oh yeah, like it's got Jeremy Allen White, Zac Efron, is A24.
I never saw a trailer for it. I just kind of heard about it in passing, saw photos of like their look and everything, kind of laughed at their shaggy hairs and weird, clothes or whatever it is. I'm just like, I don't know what this movie is, but I know it's about wrestling and it looks interesting. So I went in completely blind, completely forgot Jeremy Allen White was in it. So when he shows up,
Not even till the first third of the movie.
And when he shows up, you first see his back. That's the first thing I have to say about this movie is like, everybody in this movie is huge.
Yes.
Like distractingly big. Like Zac Efron is a distraction every time he's in it. Cause you're just like, how the heck did he get that big? Is that real?
Yeah. How do you do that?
Anyway, Jeremy Allen White shows up for the first time and he's got this freaking tank top on. And he is no longer little Carmy from The Bear. Like, that guy got big for this movie. His shoulder, his wingspan is huge. I was very impressed. And that kind of kept happening to me. I was like, oh, I didn't know this person was in it. I didn't know that person was in it. But, so awesome cast. Awesome movie. I got the information here. It was directed by Sean Durkin, written by Sean Durkin as well. Stars Zac Efron, Jeremy Allen White, and Harris Dickinson as the three titular wrestlers. Also, Hope McCallany plays the dad, Fritz von Erich.
Lily James,
amazing actor. She's perfect actress, actor. She's perfect for this movie.
Yes.
Like I don't think I've seen her in anything other than Baby Driver, but she's another one. As soon as she popped up, I was like, oh, what a good surprise.
I'm excited. You know? Here's the thing. I'm ready for her to be, because she was incredible in this, and I feel like she did more than just that, but I'm like, I'm ready for her to be the person.
Yeah.
The main actress. I need to go see the movie where she's really just doing everything.
See what she's got.
Because I'm sure she's got stuff, but
me too.
I think that is the mom.
Yeah. I just wanted to look up what she was in. Her name is Mara Tierney.
Yes.
She popped up in a movie that I saw recently, so I had to like look at what it was. Turns out it's Liar Liar. I watched Liar Liar a few weeks ago.
Nice.
A month ago or so. And she's just one of those like constants, you know, whenever she shows up, she's one of those that faces.
So I wanted to start one of the first things that I mentioned that I wanted to mention with this movie and how incredible it was is the cinematography. Did you see those camera shots?
That's what I was just pointing at when I pulled this up. It's showing it right here again. So this scene, I'll see if I can plug it into the thing, but it's the one where he's just like hanging onto the rope and it's kind of going in and out of focus. That was the moment.
I've got it here in my notes.
That was the standout moment for me when I was just like, all of it looked amazing, but it got to that scene where I was just like, oh, this looks so good.
See, that was one of the shots that I also loved and I put in here as well, but I also had a shot that was when I was like, hold on, like, wait a second. And it was a little closer to the beginning. It was that shot right after they win. I'm pretty sure the 3-man tag team championship, and it cuts to them like in the locker room or whatever after, and you see one of them do like an injection. I don't know if it's steroids. I don't know if it's like drugs.
I've assumed it was steroids.
So it does that first, and then it goes to Carrie's face, Jeremy Allen White's face, and he's looking really tired and he's looking really upset. and it's got him, and then it fades it slightly, and it puts his brother's face there as well, fading in, but it doesn't fade all the way in. It only fades slightly, and then you've got the other brother's face that also fades in, so it's not focused on any of their faces. It's only partially done, but they're all sort of there, and you see all of the pain that each of them are in. Cool. They're never fully in out of the face, but you can see their pain, the agony, and their sweat, as I said, and then it all fades out, so you never come back fully to any of them. That shot right there, the first time I saw it, was when I was like, hold on a minute, like, let's look at this, holy cow. And there were so many good shots. They had, in the script, I found screenplay, or I don't know if it's the real screenplay. I don't know if it's a draft of a screenplay, because there was some stuff I found that was changed or different. When they talk about the ranch that they grew up on, right? They call it like the dream ranch, like all of this stuff. There were so many shots of sunrises and sunsets on this ranch as well, whether in happy or sad moments, that were just beautiful and increased the emotion, I feel, of those scenes. Because sunrises and sunsets, they're always times of like awakening or new starts or just like sadness sometimes. But in any case, it's of beauty. And those shots that they had of those sunrises and sunsets on the ranch were also absolutely gorgeous.
Beautiful.
So many really good shots. And then I guess like we're already in spoiler territory, right? Like we kind of never really
jumped into it.
Well, we're talking about the cinematography. The final shot of the movie as well was a really, really good one that I liked, where they're playing the football and they're zooming out from them and they're overlooking them and kind of just like what that moment means. And we'll get more into that, but just that final shot as well, where it's zoomed out and it's, they've got their own space. It's not huge and crazy like the ranch, but it's their own space and it means a lot more to them.
Yeah.
So the cinematography, like I said, and like Michael said during the movie, did you see those camera angles?
Yeah.
Did you see that?
I kind of love that touch, too. It's like, oh, I can appreciate him. He gets it.
Exactly. He's the one who's like, hey, man.
He might not be wrestling with the rest of them, but he gets how to put on a show.
Hey, man, he knows. He knows. Which, now that we're talking about that, leads right into my next moment, or the next thing I want to talk about is the music from this movie, right? So Michael obviously is the brother who kind of leans more into the musical side, like his dad used to, that they didn't know until they were, you know, in their 20s as young adults, they didn't know their dad. So the score for this movie was done by Richard Reed Perry, who is a member of the band Arcade Fire.
Oh, okay.
Which is a band that I love and a band that I also like when they get involved in movie soundtracks, because they helped write and record one of my favorite movie soundtracks, the movie soundtrack to Her, which is beautiful. If you haven't checked it out, check out Her. But he did that, and so then him and his wife, who is Little Scream, aka Laurel Sprengelmeyer, they sing the song at the very end, but it's written throughout the movie, the song Live That Way Forever, right? And this song has been on my playlist ever since I saw this movie. I've been listening to it on repeat. It's so good. It's very good, and it's throughout the entire movie. So this song they have at the very end when they're having that shot I talked about that zoomed out. It's the song that Michael sings at the frat party that he goes, that they sneak out to go play at. And it's also the song that Michael is attempting to play on his guitar after he has the stroke and he realizes that he can't really play that much anymore before he dies. And so this song is incredible, and it's woven throughout the entire movie. And like I said, it's really good. If you have listened to it or haven't, it's one to definitely check out. So that one's good. And that's an original song for the movie, and there's a lot of original music in the movie. There's also a lot of new music that already existed that they put into the movie, right? Just like songs and stuff.
Yeah.
This movie, I'm going to talk so much about everything that I love. But this movie was made for me, okay? This movie was made for me in so many ways. And these two songs being dropped within like 20, 25 minutes of each other was like whiplash to me. It was crazy. Not because they're so different, which they are. Tom Sawyer by Rush gets dropped during a wrestling and training montage, which we'll also talk about that more later. I love Rush. And then Country Boy, when they're at the wedding and they're doing their little dance, Country Boy by John Denver gets dropped. My father's favorite band and the one that he introduced me to was Rush. And he had me listen to so much Rush, Tom Sawyer, YYZ, all of this stuff. He loved showing it to me. My mother and her family love John Denver more than anything in the entire world. And they introduced me to that so much. And even if I don't listen to these people so much anymore, having these dropped in the same thing, like so close to each other, I was like, this is my family. This is what got introduced to me as a kid. I was like, this is awesome. Crazy. There was so much stuff that was happening. And then Don't Fear the Reaper as well was also, I think, in the middle of those, if I remember right, at one of the fights or something that they had, one of the wrestling sequences. Okay. So music, what did you notice? What did you like about the music in this movie?
I just remember thinking as it was playing those needle drops, I just remember thinking, oh, this scene
sometimes
this
literally
is done right. Like, this is how needle drops are done right. It's time period appropriate. It's accurate to the story, like the movie they're playing. I just couldn't help but thinking of the Super Mario Bros. Movie, mm-hmm. which like is full of needle drops, but they're so out of place. And it's in a movie that's just like, why are we doing needle drops with a video game movie? We should be using the video game soundtrack, you mm-hmm. know? So that's what really stood up to me. It was just like, oh, this adds to just like the ambiance of the entire thing that's going on. I don't have any of these personal connections like you do to them, other than I recognize them and I've heard them before, you know? And I'm just like, oh, this is great. This is putting me in the shoes of the time period. It's, yeah, they're really good choices.
Amazing choices. So Rush especially was one that I grew up on.
Rush
and
all
then,
the time.
And then I was a percussionist. I played the drums a lot in high school, right? And so, as someone who plays the drums on high school, Neil Peart was one of my idols, right? The drummer for Rush, absolutely incredible. And so Tom Sawyer dropped and it was going, and I was tapping along with my feet and I was like lightly, you know, we're in the theater, right? Yeah. So I'm not being too loud, but I was like playing it because it's so good. I just loved listening to it while I watched this wrestling montage of them going around and beating on people and getting beat on. Mm-hmm. It was one of my favorite scenes of the movie. And I have a few favorite scenes, but spoiler, that is one of them.
Nice.
Is that montage where Tom Sawyer is playing, they're going around, beating on people, getting beat up. Just the music is so well done in this movie, and the original score as well is one of my favorite things. Mm-hmm. Done by, again, Richard Reed Perry. All right, so this movie, there's a lot of different quotes that kind of made me think and made me stop and wonder about the themes of the movie and what's going on. So there's a lot of different themes in this movie. There's a lot of things that I personally drew from it and think would be super, super relevant for anyone to watch and think about, right? There's a lot of things about toxic masculinity, about grief, about the ways that we handle ourselves, about our family connections, about being able to stay connected to our family, about suicide, about mm-hmm. so many different things. And there's a lot of things that happen. So this one is one that gets repeated a few times throughout the movie in slight variations. But the basic line is the one that you'll recognize from Zac Efron saying, "My father said if we were the toughest, the strongest, the most successful, nothing would ever hurt us. I believed him. We all did." This one shows up a few different times. It's right near the beginning when he's running out. He goes on his morning run right near the beginning. It's right near the end, right before he's training for his fight with Ric Flair as well. You hear him say it because he's training for it, and this is after his brothers are, two of his brothers are gone. You hear him say it while he's training for that, and you also hear in that one his father's voiceover because he's training for this fight, but it also does a flashback to when him and his brothers were all training for wrestling and in the ring, and his dad was there on the side pushing him to be harder, to be faster. And in that moment, it's huge because that's kind of, this movie is weird kind of with the way that it paces it, but that scene is almost, it's not the climax of action, but the fight with Ric Flair and what happens afterwards is it's like the crossroads of the movie, more like the turning point of the movie, right? With what he decides is important and what he decides to do with his life, right? Where he gets there and talk about it more, but basically that where he's believed this his entire life, right? Like, we have to be the strongest, we have to be the fastest, we have to do more than everyone, we can't ever stop, we have to keep going because that's the way that we are protected, right? At the beginning, right after this, is he says, you know, my mom tried to protect us with God, my dad tried to protect us with wrestling. And then it gets into the wrestling stuff, and so this line that it kind of flows through the movie has so much importance to it and was one of my favorites. There's a lot of good ones. Sorry, I feel like I'm going to talk a lot about this one. This movie is 5 stars for me. I put it 5 stars on Letterboxd. I went and saw it again. It was 5 stars again. Mm. This movie is so good.
This is your opportunity after so many movies that I sit over here on the corner and I make you watch, and then I just nerd out hard on it. This is your opportunity, man. So I'm going to sit back and enjoy your passion.
I wore the A24 sweater and everything today. Awesome. I was just like, there's too much. All right.
Keep going. I love this.
All right. So he meets Lily James. They go on their date. There's a lot of funny lines. You know, what do you want? More ribs? Like, there's a lot of, like, funny things that. But then after that, she asks, like, he was like, well, that's not what everything you want, right? Like, do you want to be world champion and more ribs and stuff like that, right? Like, there are also a lot of funny moments in this movie that are just sprinkled in here or there. Where he says, oh, yeah, I'd like to be with my family, be with my brothers, you know, like, all live together, do whatever. And she says, well, like, what do you like about your brothers? And he says, anything, just being together. Just being together. We can do anything. And shortly after that, not right away, but shortly after that is the scene where Carrie's not there yet, right? They haven't introduced Jeremy Allen White into the movie, but him and David and Michael, it's when they go tubing down the river that's on the property, and they're just drinking their beers, they're doing whatever. And there's so many moments in the movie where you can just see the brothers doing thing and being together with their brothers. Just being together is what they love.
Mm-hmm.
This one is definitely from one of the crazier scenes of the movie, right? So this is where he fights, I forget what the guy's name is. It's not Ric Flair, but it's the other one. The original one, the guy who's big and fat, and he's the current heavyweight champion of the world, right? And he comes in there, and he's all snobby and whatever. And Zac Efron is supposed to fight him, right? Kevin's supposed to fight him. And so they do that, and things go a little off script, like you find out later, and he gets thrown out of the ring. And then they do the body slam, not the suplex. I forget. I'm not like
I don't submit
like
that one.
WWE, all that stuff. That, I don't know. That's all the one names of my
things
everything.
Too. I think that's one of the things that I also appreciate the most about this movie. And we can kind of get to that in a little bit when we get to your favorite. I say you have favorite scenes on there, but mm-hmm. I'm not a wrestling fan either. So a lot of this is very foreign to me. Mm-hmm. Like these names, all this kind of thing. I didn't know anything about the story going in. I didn't even know this was a true story going in. I didn't know these were real people, but I loved how they interweaved kind of wrestling facts or conversations mm-hmm. in the conversations. This is probably appropriate time to say it. One of my favorite lines of the entire movie is when Lily James' character asks him like about wrestling, like right. isn't it fake? I don't remember exactly how she right. says it, but
she says, and he says nothing about it is fake. She's like, okay.
She like starts pointing out all of his injuries. You know, like, is this fake? Is that fake? And she's like, well, I guess not. It's very real. And this is how our buddy Michael, that's come on the mm-hmm. podcast before, has explained it to me before. You know, like, yeah, I didn't understand how the ranking systems worked until mm-hmm. they kind of pointed it out in that scene with Lily James.
Prearranged?
Where it's a prearranged fight, which I've always understood, but I never understood how they moved up in categories, and they interweaved it in the conversation with her, where it's just like, oh, yeah, you do good at your job, you get moved forward. It all depends on how well you fight, depends on how well the crowd reacts to you, and it depends on, like, how much kind of your bosses love you is kind of what the mm-hmm. point of the thing is. And they're kind of like pushed off to the side a lot because of who they are. But it made wrestling make a lot more sense to me, where it's like, oh yeah, okay. So it is fake, quote unquote, in a way, because there's always a prearranged winner before the fight even starts. And they have mm-hmm. an idea of what this fight is going to be,
what they're
going to
do.
But if what you've prearranged doesn't work out and the crowd doesn't react to it, or if like people go off script a little bit, and you don't play along, like with what he does being thrown out of the ring and having to take that fall on the cement and really injuring himself, then you're not going to move up and you're not going to be successful in the job. It just made me appreciate wrestling a lot more as 100%. This thing went on.
And what you said before, I also was not, I don't know a ton about all of this. And that was, I had never heard of the Von Erich brothers before this movie as well. So that was kind of another reason why I think this film hit me so hard, was because I was watching it and I was like, oh, this is a fun sports movie. And I think that's what I have written later on, is it has a lot of classic sports movie ingredients. And that was like my childhood, watching like Angels in the Outfield mm-hmm. and like all of those sports Rocky. Movies as a sports loving kid. But it had all of those ingredients. And I was like, this is fun. This is cool. This is still heartfelt. I like it. And then when the tragic events start happening, I was like devastated.
Because
I had no clue.
Yeah, me neither. Not having watched a trailer or anything, I didn't realize this was going to be a sad movie.
It was absolutely tragic. But the scene that we've been talking about, right, where he goes and he fights him and he gets dropped on the cement floor and you can tell he just has. It's so painful. It kind of dulls out the audience sound. You hear that ringing. He's struggling to get back in the ring. The ref is also in on it, and he knows he's supposed to get back in, so he's like,
are you close?
Five. Like, count it as slow as he can to let him get back in, right? He does all of that. The fight ends. You know, the other guy gets disqualified, but it's not a title fight. It doesn't matter. He leaves, and they're in the back. He's in the back with David, and his dad comes back, right? His dad tells him, you were slow, you were long getting up. And he's speaking, I don't want to say like reasonably, where his dad's unreasonably, even though it kind of is like that, he's just,
never take
like he said,
that hard.
Exactly. He's like, I just never hit the floor that hard before. And he says, you just got to take it and get up. And he's like, I know, he wasn't supposed to throw me out of the ring. It caught me off guard. There was nothing I could do. I couldn't physically move. Like, he's just being honest where he was trying. He was doing everything he could, and he just couldn't. And then his dad says, this is how they test you. So where it's just like, even when you're at the absolute limit, right, you literally couldn't do anything. You physically couldn't move, and you still somehow find a way to get back in that ring. He just says, you just got to do it. You just have to take it. Just got to take the punches, do whatever, and it doesn't matter. You just have to do it. You have to be the strongest. You have to do more, even when your body is at its actual literal limit. That's the moment where you're like, there's not enough, right? There's never going to be enough. That's the whole kind of point of a lot of this movie, is they talk about being the strongest, the fastest, the everything, when there's not really a limit, and there's always going to be someone else who is stronger, is faster, or who thinks they're stronger and faster. You could never actually reach that limit, that unattainable goal that's being set for you. So this is one of my favorites that I hadn't seen a lot of other people talking about. I think I started off my first Letterboxd movie review of it with this quote. And it was the mom, Doris, when she was bringing Michael a meal after his surgery and after his coma. And they were looking at the painting on the wall that she had painted. And she told him, she was like, oh, I painted that. That's my childhood home, I painted that. And he's, you know, they've lived in this house for years and years. This kid's 21, 22 years old. And he says, well, why didn't you tell anyone? And she said, I had my reasons. I just can't remember them anymore. And that line was kind of crazy to me in the movie, because Doris, as weird as it sounds, was one of the most interesting and most complex characters of this movie. Because the way that Fritz acts with his sons and with his brothers is obviously, or not his brothers, and how they act with each other is kind of obviously the main focal point of the movie and how it affects them. How Fritz acts and the way that he is affects Doris so, so much. And that comes through a lot of times in the movies. In the movie, and it's in a lot of ways that we don't really recognize, right? Doris loves painting, and you can see this later on in the movie. She starts painting again. She loves it. She loved that Fritz used to be musical, and he would play her the most beautiful songs. She loved all of these things, and as he got into wrestling, and as he got into this very, you know, we need to have our home be this certain way. You're a homemaker, and we need to do this. We'll raise our boys this way and do whatever. Those things kind of slowly faded away. They stopped talking about those things. They stopped doing those things. And so this line was kind of that moment that it really, really hit me how much Fritz and what happened with his boys is one thing, but how much it also affected her. Mm-hmm. She painted this beautiful picture of her childhood home, and in 25, 20, 30 years, who knows, none of them ever knew that she had done that because of how things were in their home and because of what was talked about, what was acceptable to talk about, and what wasn't. So it's a tiny little line, and there's a lot of these tiny little lines and tiny little moments with Doris that just go
a
really, really long way.
Yeah.
About what's happening in it. So I don't know. That's like one of the smaller ones that kind of like still really got to me. So, and then right after that, Michael says, Everyone wants me to be David, but I can't replace him. So this is after David had died, right? And they're trying to get him back into wrestling. And he got hurt, and he had to get the surgery, went into the coma, mm-hmm. came back, and you can just tell he's not the same person, right? But they're still on him about
even after all wrestling, that,
even after still everything. Wanted to do it.
Everyone's still asking the questions. When he's going to get back in the ring? What's going to happen?
Exactly.
He can't even answer his own question. They're still pushing for it.
And I have something down here that I kind of want to talk about later, but there's so many different moments in this movie that I guess we'll kind of bring it up under the name of The Limit, right? Like, what's the limit? What's the moment that you need to be able to stop and take a look at, like, reality, realizations, and think about what's actually good for people and stop, right? Because there's so much, like, right, you talk about how if you want to be strong and be the best at something, you need to give everything, and that's, like, very true. But at the same time, you need to be able to stop and take account of what's happening around you and be able to think reasonably and logically about how what you're doing affects you. And the biggest moment, is this was, you know, one of those moments where they're expecting Michael to get back in the ring even after everything. Like, they being, you know, Kevin and them kind of went along with it because it was what was expected and what was going on. The other one of these moments that was really kind of super impactful to me was earlier in the movie, right, literally the night of David's funeral, where the father sits down with the boys and he approaches them about the title fight that David had and the opportunity that they still had to go and do that, right? It's the night of their brother's funeral, and he brings it up to them. And not only does he bring it up to them about, like, hey, are you guys ready for this? They fight about wanting to do it. And that was where I was like, oh, my goodness. Like, what is happening here? Like, this just happened. And obviously, we know wrestling is huge and it's so big in this family. But that was where I was like, dang. Like, it's so ingrained into them needing this, wanting this, having the belt in the family that brother's death almost falls to the side when it's like, all right, well, the title fight's still up for grabs. Who's doing it? Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. I have a lot more I can say. Is there anything you wanted to talk about, Vince? I feel like I'm talking a lot. I need to, like, breathe for a second. Yeah. Like, we can go to favorite scenes because I can jump back with different lines and stuff like that if you had anything from the movie that stuck out to you. Or
there was another scene that I absolutely loved. Going back to kind of how you were talking about how this is a sports movie, like, partially, like, I mean, it is shot very much like a sports movie. There was a very specific scene after one of the brothers dies and Kevin goes back into the ring and is fighting, is it Ric Flair? I can't remember. It might have been. He does the iron hold on him, and he's like got all this like pent up emotion and rage. It's Ric Flair that he's fighting, right? And he kind of snaps in the ring, and it's shot so well that even though the movie establishes that wrestling is predetermined, the endings of the fights, and he goes into that ring and he starts fighting, and the way that it's shot and the way that he's performing the fight, I couldn't tell whether or not what he was doing was part of the act or if he really was breaking down. Mm-hmm. You know, like, he's putting on this, the whole point of being in the ring is to put on a show, whether that's to be the hero or the heel, you know? And so when it jumps back into that scene after his brother dies, I couldn't tell if he was playing a role in that ring and he was really, or if he was really hurting Ric Flair, you know? And you learn about at the end of it that he really was breaking down in the ring, you know, and he really did hurt him. He walks into the locker room afterward and he's all bloody and Ric Flair is just like excited, you know, like, I'll get back in the ring with you any day, you know, you're great, you're crazy. And it kind of worked out for him. But in that moment, the way that scene played out, I was just like, wait, is this real? Is this like it felt like the final boxing scene almost where he's like pushing and he's going to win the title and he's going for it, you know, and he doesn't, he stops caring about the predetermined ending and he's going to win this. And I kind of started like hoping for him, like, oh yeah, let's go, Kevin, you know, get this. And then it started getting very violent. I was like, oh wait, maybe not. Wait, is this part of it? What's happening? So I don't know, that scene really, really stood out to me as well.
That scene was definitely one of my favorites. what you were saying is exactly it, is this was the moment I referred to as like the turning point of the movie, mm-hmm. where he makes a big decision, right? Right before he's doing the training and everything, and you hear him and his dad talking about needing to be the toughest and the strongest and everything, and he goes into this fight, and he needs to have it, right? This is the moment. All of his brothers are gone now, and it's just him. And he needs, or no, Carrie's still alive. Yeah. But basically, so many of his brothers are gone, and this needs to happen, right? He needs to be the toughest and the strongest, and he goes into the ring with the predetermined outcome, the furthest thing from his mind. Because you also, before this happened, had that big old speech from Ric Flair, right? The one on TV, and it's just the performance, right? Where he's like, he's like, I'm the biggest, the strongest, I'm the best looking, I've got a limousine a mile long. I think I have.
Just the best.
Exactly. I think I wrote, let's see if I wrote something about it. I might not have wrote anything about that specifically, but basically there's just so much that goes into it. What I talked about, like the limit, right? You think like you need to be the toughest, the strongest, and the very best. And even if you are, there's always going to be someone who says they are. And no matter what happens, that won't change. Even if you beat them in a fight, that won't change. Yeah. They'll still say they're the best. I've got a limousine a mile long. There's 25 women in it. I've got the biggest watch. I've got a Rolex. I look like this. I'm the best, right? And that happens before the fight. And Kevin goes into the fight saying, I need to win this. I need to absolutely destroy him. He gives him the iron claw. He ends up all bloody. He loses it. And then afterwards, when he's coming down, he says, wow, that really happened. His dad's mad at him. Carrie's mad at him because he lost his composure in the ring. And Ric Flair comes in, right? And he was like, oh, man, that was crazy. That was so fun. I loved it. Do you want to get messed up tonight? Like, where can we drink around here? And he's just like, he came into this as a fight, needing to destroy this man. And afterwards, you know, Ric Flair, he's doing the wrestling thing. Like, hey, man, like, that was good.
You put really on a good put show. On a show.
Like, let's go drink. And he's like, all right, like, no, I'm good. Like we just fought, and it was really, really important to me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, all of these things that the guy said before, he's just like, okay, well, if you change your mind, like, I'm down at the Holiday Inn, you know, like,
come party,
all of this stuff that he says, right? How he's, like, the biggest, the best, all this whatever. Like, he's really just another wrestler. And, yeah, he's big. He's got the title and all this stuff, but he's staying at the Holiday Inn. He's doing whatever, right? Because that's this life. And this is, and what I think I put in somewhere in here, this is Kevin's realization moment, is what I called it. The moment where he finally learns really what's important and learns that line, right? Have to be the strongest, the most successful, the very best, where he ends up learning that's not it. Mm. He knows that's not it anymore. Because after Ric Flair says that and he goes away, his dad and Carrie are still kind of trying to talk to him, and then they leave, and you just see him kind of chuckle. And the scene right after that, because there's kind of a compilation of scenes that happens, but the scene right after that is where you see the school bus pulling in, and he's there to pick up his boys from school, and then he's making dinner for them. There's all of that different stuff that happens, and he really starts to focus on his family and be there for his family again, which is, like I said, it's Kevin's turning point. It's his realization moment of what is actually important in life and what do I need to put my attention on. So
good.
Sorry. Yeah, you said that scene is definitely one of my favorite scenes in the movie. There's a lot of favorite scenes. One that's a little earlier in the movie that's also a really, really cool shot is Fritz offering the title fight to David and all of what I call the sight lines in it, basically what you're looking at and what the characters are looking at, right? Fritz walks in. The dad and the three sons are sitting there, and he says, hey, we've got a chance for, you know, a fight with, you know, the heavyweight contender, and I want it to be you, David, right? And Kevin just kind of sits there, and he's doing his own thing, and David tries to look at him, and he's like, don't look at your brother, like, look at me, and he stands up, and they're looking at each other, and Carrie and Kevin kind of exchange a glance or two, and it's really interesting because, you know, the three boys are sitting down and the dad's there, and he has David like come up and he gives him a hug and stuff after that. And then when they're talking, the boys are sitting there in front of them, and he ends up talking like this to David, not even looking at him, because so much of what this movie talks about is the boys needing to be the best and perform to get their father's attention. One of the craziest and most heartfelt lines, and it's sad because it's also the scene where Michael is dying, is Kevin and Carrie are trying to get Carrie back in the ring when after he's lost his leg. And he's like, dude, you need to slow down. And he's just exasperated. His leg hurts so bad. But he was like, what? So you can be the only one in the ring and get all of dad's attention? Like, F no. And there's just so much of that, that's what so much of this movie is about, is they've realized that they have to be the best and do the best in wrestling and anything else to be able to get their dad's love.
I mean, there's literally a line at the beginning of the movie where he ranks the kids.
Right.
Like, right now, he's my favorite. But, you know, this can change. He's, like, exactly like in a wrestling ring. He's just like, depending on how you perform, you win my love.
Exactly. Just the conditional love and what they have to do to earn it. And that's so much of what this movie is about and what almost a cautionary tale of make sure that you're not doing these things, or just kind of like, hey, these things happen and what can we do to sort of change that? Mm-hmm. Right. Jeez. I still have so much. I'll try to go fast because I don't want to spend too long, but I have so much that I love about this movie. Vince, I'm not going to lie to you. I bawled my eyes out in this movie both times I saw it, multiple times during the movie, and it was good cries. I tweeted the other day, and it was specifically about this movie, but there are multiple times that this can happen. My favorite movie experiences are when you're like, oh, like, I've kind of heard some good things about this movie, and you, like, go to watch it, and you just walk out, like, emotionally drained, like, after a Monday matinee of freaking the Iron Claw, and I'm just like, oh, my life has changed, like, stuff like that. And this was just one of those movies for me.
That's great. That's awesome.
I'm just going to rattle off some of the final of my favorite lines. Favorite lines, these ones hurt me, okay? Both of the notes that the boys left before they died. I'm not going to say the word because YouTube can get kind of funny about if they place your stuff if you use, I already said it once, but suicide. So I'll try not to say it. But I'm sorry if I hurt you, but I'm going to a better place. Which that one was almost so sad because Michael, it was after his coma where you could just tell that something wasn't right anymore. He couldn't play, like I said, the song that he played at the gig earlier, so you knew that he at one time knew how to play it.
Very well.
He could barely pluck it out where I could make it what it was, and it made it really interesting, and he couldn't get that. He couldn't wrestle anymore. He didn't want to wrestle anymore, but he knew it would be expected of him. Mm-hmm. So he said, I'm sorry if I hurt you, but I'm going to a better place. Devastating.
Yeah.
Like, the moment's already sad enough as it is, and then you see that. Terrible. And then Carrie's as well, which also hurt me. I don't know what's on the other side, but I can't be here anymore. Tonight, I walk with my brothers.
That one's tough.
Ugh. That one is tough because I think pretty sure you also see it after Kevin brings him inside and puts him on the kitchen table.
And then he's sitting there. Is this where it gets to the
afterlife scene? Yeah. And that I have as one of my favorite scenes of the movie. The afterlife scene was... I also cried during that scene with no regrets at all. just absolutely beautiful. They're on that same river where they were earlier, so it made me think of when they were tubing down the river. It's that exact same place. The river and... In the scene before, there are, you know, people jumping off the dock. And in this one, his brothers are on the dock as he, you know, is on the boat and he's coming down. And so I love that afterlife scene because the first thing you see is him walking out of the house and jumping. He's happy he's got his foot back. He's definitely whole again. And then he reunites with his brothers and they just share a hug and you feel that. I'm getting, like, emotional right now talking about it. Sorry. They share that love that we had in the first part of the movie that you saw and you knew that these brothers' connection was so special. And you saw them have that again, right? And it's what makes it so heartbreaking is that they have that and it's the afterlife. And, you know, a lot of people have a lot of different views about the afterlife and what can happen. But it was so emotional to see that and also see him connect with his younger brother who... They didn't know because he died younger. So that moment was special. And then you come back, and it's a very warm. It's another one of those golden hour moments, right? Where it's just very beautiful. The sun is shining. Sunrise, sunset, whatever it is. It's very warm, very beautiful. And even though he's having a moment with his brother, it cuts back to Zac Efron as Kevin with Carrie on the table. And it's very cold as far as the color scheme goes. And he's very upset, obviously, by it. What happened with his dad? What happened with his last brother that he had? And it ends up affecting him a lot. And we'll get to that later because I have another, you know, I always have another, but the end of the movie obviously gets into a lot of that, the relationship with the brothers and what it means to them. But, yeah. Oh, so one of my other lines here, you didn't take care of them. You didn't take care of any of them. Him kind of finally letting his anger spew over to his dad with, hey,
finally, like realizing, you know, that he's been taking, Kevin just takes over and over the blame on for everything that goes wrong. Like, his dad just blames him for everything that happens, even though Kevin is, like, doing his best to help his brothers, like, at all times. Like, doesn't one of the brothers actually, yeah, it's Carrie actually calls him and tells him he's having a hard time, and he calls up his dad and tells his dad, you know,
right,
watch
before
him.
This, yeah.
Yeah, and he doesn't, and literally the dad shows up, and he's just like, well, that was your responsibility. He's like, are you kidding me? He's like, I told you that there was something wrong. I did everything I could, and over in Kevin's life, he's just accepted the blame that his father puts on him because the brothers were always responsible for each other. The dad was never responsible for the kids other than making them a success. But when it came to, like, personal life and emotions, it was always like, oh, it's between the two of you. You guys figure it out. I don't care.
And Doris also has one of those lines, yeah, right, where the boys come to him and say, hey, you have to talk to him about this or you have to do this. She's and like, she'll nope. say, nope, between you need to, you know, talk about, or because what is it like? Oh, like, I need to talk or something. And she'll say, that's what your brothers are for. Mm-hmm. Or, oh, you need to do this. Like, oh, have your brothers figure it out. So or when in that phone call, right, after he had the call with Carrie and then he called his dad, and he was like, I'm just really worried about him. We need to figure out what we're going to do to help him. And this is after, right? This isn't it, the craziest part is this is after David died and then Michael also died. Mm. And he calls his dad and says, we need to find out what to do to help Carrie because he's not good. He just called me and said he wasn't good. This isn't just my imagination. He said he's not good. And he said, you guys got to figure it out amongst yourselves.
Such an irresponsible thing.
Irresponsible, crazy, and just wild. And the other thing that I was thinking about when you were talking about that is the crazy symbolism of that moment. Him finally saying that and then also physically fighting back against his dad. That's a huge symbol of this movie is, yes, they're in the ring and they're wrestling all this stuff. The brothers literally fight each other for the father's love, right? And they literally fight each other in the movie, but it never goes back that other way. There's no talking back. There's no questioning his authority.
Just accepting always.
And that's the thing is Fritz, he's always the one who's making the rule, who's calling the shots, and you don't question it ever. Later on, when Kevin says, hey, Dad, we got an offer to sell the business. I really got to, like, do something about it. I need it for my family. And he says, hey, I didn't give it to you for you to sell it and all that other stuff. He confronts him about, like, hey, I went through the books. Like, I never got paid as much as this says that I should have got paid. I'm basically saying, I know you took extra money that should have been mine. I know it. It's not like a question. I know it happened. And his dad literally responds with, I did everything for your own betterment. Don't you ever question me, even though it's not even a question. And that was another moment where he already knew this, but it was like Lily James' character. I forget. What's her name? I should know. We've just been talking about everyone else. It's crazy that we haven't mentioned Lily James that much because she was incredible in this.
Pam,
right. Kevin and Pam. Where she was like, nothing gets through to that man. Like, you know that. Just, it's what happens, right? And it's also at that moment where you kind of realize that he doesn't want to, but he's like, I might need to start, you know, limiting the time that my sons are here with my dad, which I don't want to do, but it's because they're there, they're watching Carrie on the TV, which they like to do. But then when he says that, and they're kind of fighting about that, Carrie ends up winning right then at that moment, and he says, that's it, look at your uncle, like, that's how you do it right there. And so it's just, so many different moments that are like that. We can talk about that one at the end. We can kind of end the podcast with the end of the movie. We'll get that. But I have a lot of other things. A lot of them we've kind of already touched on. But some of the biggest ones are the biggest messages that I took away from the movie, or kind of moments or things that made me feel. The first one is grief. And this is, Zac Efron has so many moments in this movie where I think he's Oscar worthy by a long shot, right? So many, so many moments. His facial expressions in this movie, above anything. He has this huge body and he does so much with it that it can kind of be hard. Like you said, it's distracting how insanely ripped all of these people are. It can be kind of hard to realize that Zac Efron and the acting he does with his face and what he does with that huge freaking jawline is so insane. And one of those things is grief. Those different moments where they have to bear these insane moments of grief stone-faced, right? Because of what their father said. Mm-hmm. No sunglasses, no tears.
Show your strength at all times.
Exactly. And once they're at the, I'm pretty sure it's Michael's funeral, right? And James Pam is there, and there's a really cool shot, another very cool cinematic shot that rack focuses because you have them sitting, right? You have Carrie, and you have Kevin, and you have Pam. And it starts on Pam, and she is trying her best to keep it together, but she's crying. And that's what she's going to do because she knows that she can, and she's so sad about what's happened. And she looks over, and it rack focuses to Kevin, and you can see Carrie as well with that stone face. And a fun fact that you probably noticed, but just like in case you didn't kind of keep track of, they don't, right? They don't cry the entire movie until the very end. Kevin doesn't cry until the very, very end because of where they were raised and because of that message that I feel like a lot of people can take that end message and just be like, oh, like the whole like boys don't cry. It was super blunt, super on the nose at the end and stuff, but just all of the messaging that went in like leading up to that moment and what made it that, like you can't just reduce it to that, was another one of my main things that I was like, I see a lot of people saying this, but you can't just have that. But anyway, the grief is really big. And then there's a lot, we kind of talked a lot about toxic masculinity and the father's influence on, hey, if you're not being the very best, the very strongest, then you're not important to me and you have to do that. Otherwise, you're not being good. You're not taking care of your family if you're not doing that. And there's a lot to be said about, like, you know, being able to have that strength and not just slack off in everything without having unrealistic expectations that go into it. And that this is what the whole movie is about. But also one of the more interesting things to me that I kind of thought about was what the screenplay, and he says it, but it's kind of hard to emphasize it because it's such a short word, is it. And it being Kevin's fear of passing that generational trauma of masculinity and unrealistic expectations that he inherited and that he felt from his dad and all of his brothers got down to his sons. He has that moment after Michael's funeral and that middle section of the movie where he's not coming home anymore. And she tells him, I need you at home. I need you to be there. And he says, I just can't. And from him training and everything, you find out that it's because he's afraid of passing that on. Mm-hmm. And he stays away from them until after that fight with Ric Flair when he comes home. And she's surprised. And then he's there for his family. And he's loving it. So that was one of the coolest scenes. That was like really brief and kind of subtle during the movie of something that can be really, really scary because you know, like the whole like nature versus nurture debate of like you can change and do so much with your life, but there's also literal genetic predispositions where people are more inclined to do things because of their DNA and how you're raised, right? And you can always change and you can always do things differently and you can break that generational curse or whatever, right? That they talk about so much in the movie, but there is like a lot to be said about there's literal genetic predispositions that, yeah, my dad did it this way, and so I can do what I can to stop it, but my DNA is written to kind of be this way, and I don't want my children to be that way. And so there is that literal and real fear of, hey, I don't want this to happen to them. But then needing to get to that moment that he eventually gets to in the movie where he says, I have to be there for my family and I can be the one to break that curse and to put it onto the next level, right? I love like the curse thing that went in the movie. And one of my favorite like funny Letterboxd reviews that I saw from this movie is when the generational or like family curse is literally just the existence of your father. And I want to say like right after this movie, I almost wanted to call my dad up and like tell him how much I loved him and like thank you for not being this type of dad, right? Like there's so much you said that. So I hope like no one sees this on the internet. It's like, oh man, this dude, his dad, they gotta have a messed up relationship. My dad has definitely been super great and I've loved him. And to be fair, I did want to mention, I haven't done too much research yet into the real story of the Von Erichs. I do know that there is one other son that also died that's not included in the movie at all because there's no time. It would have been too much. There was already so much drama. And there's a lot of other like really disturbing and really sad things that went on. Mm-hmm. Kevin Von Erich, the one who's still alive, right? And it shows his family in the ranch or whatever. They didn't get a lot of input from them when they were doing it other than a few things here or there. He said he wanted to let it known that, yeah, like I understand this movie and I understand what it's saying about my dad, but I love my dad and he definitely did a lot for us and he loved us. And it kind of makes him out to be the villain, and he's the only reason and the sole reason that my brothers died from drugs and from all of these other things that happened with their lives. So I love my dad. So that's like to be fair, with the real life story of it, right? But there's a lot that goes into it. And there was a lot that made me really emotional. These were kind of the moments where even when it wasn't one of the death scenes, which I kind of sobbed during, like that I was still crying just thinking about these, you know, the generational curse, the fear of having to be the provider for your family, but possibly passing sort of those traumas and being too hard on your kids and all of those things on that can be super scared becoming a parent to be able to kind of pass those things on. And I don't have kids, but that's definitely one of the biggest things I think about is I think everyone thinks about, right? I'm going to parent these children. How do I make sure that I take care of them the best? How do I make sure that I'm loving? How do I make sure I raise them sternly so that they follow the right path, but not obviously to the point of like this movie, right? So there was a lot that went into that. I don't know. What are your kind of thoughts about? I know I've said a lot about all of that. Like, was there a lot that you kind of took the same way and thought about as far as that stuff? Or was I just like, whoa, like just reading too far into too much stuff?
No, I think you 100% covered it well. I like that you pointed that out, that even though what the real Kevin said about his dad, like, I'm happy to know that even though there was probably a lot bad that happened in Kevin's life, he can still find the good and appreciate what was given to him. Mm-hmm. Around kind of the rough edges, you know what I mean? Like, because No matter what happens, he's still your father, you know, and you're still going to care about him. And he did help you become the person that you are, mm-hmm. you know. So I'm glad that Kevin still has a view of his father that he can appreciate and pass on to his kids. And he can take those lessons and not do the things that his father did to him, you know, and pass that down. Like, no, that's all. I think you covered that very well.
So real life circumstances, the end, emotional gut punch. So a lot of people talked about this, right? Where a lot of people, I wouldn't say dislike the movie, but they talk about it and they're just like, I don't go to a movie to get like absolutely, you know, hit in the nuts over and over again with like emotional scenes and just absolutely destroyed. It can become tiresome to a lot of people. Okay. I kind of like those things. I don't know. I like a movie that can get me in my emotions that doesn't feel cheap.
Yeah, right? It can make you feel something.
Like, it made me feel so many things. And, like, when I feel, like, that kind of, like, that raw emotionality during and after a movie, that's when I know I've had one of those really mm-hmm. good movie experiences, right? And I like it, again, in a way that doesn't feel cheap. Because there are so many times where you're watching a movie and there's, like, too many deaths. There's just, like, stuff that they're just trying to just destroy you, right? And like they're trying to make you feel something, and they're just like building up to stuff in ways that are unnecessary or like things that are dumb. I felt like this was paced very well, and there was a lot of tragicness that happened, but I felt like we grew to love these characters, we grew to love the brothers and the emotions and the connections that they had, and that did make these moments where they chose to leave the life or were pushing themselves too hard in David's case and ended up dying, and those moments were so hard. And David's was definitely especially shocking because, like you said, we didn't really have an idea of what was going to happen when we got into this.
That's the last thing I expected with him. Like, I didn't think he was going to become a wrestler. I thought he was going to be the standout. I thought he was going to be the disappointment of the father, you know? I thought that was going to play his role. That was going to be his role to play.
Well, because especially, like, he kind of sets it up that way, you know? Because he's the one who's like, Dad, like, chill out with Michael. Like, get off him. Like, he's fine, you know?
Excuse me. I was thinking Michael.
Oh, you were thinking Michael? The guy who I was thinking but of. David the musician. Well, but yeah, the musician as well. So David's death when he goes to Japan and they find him dead in his hotel room from a ruptured intestine. That was kind of foreshadowed with him and his brothers.
Which is probably one of my other favorite scenes. Him in the bathroom. That touching moment between the two brothers just sitting in the stall together.
It's so sad, dude. There's so much foreshadowing to David's death that I didn't realize the first time around until I watched it the second time. They talk about that stuff, right? Obviously, he throws up the blood, so you know something's wrong with him, right? You don't really know what. He tells him, he's like, oh, turns out this is a shotgun wedding. Like, and he's like, oh, you dog. He's like, I'm going to be an uncle. Like, oh, that makes me so happy.
So touching after this, like, scary moment of seeing him throwing up blood. And she's like, oh.
And they're just so happy for each other. You can feel that brotherly love.
Oh, something's going to go
all
wrong.
All of that stuff. Then they go out. Coming. They drop Country Boy by John Denver, and they're all dancing, and it shows all of them.
Dance.
And it goes down the line, and it hits David the last because he's at the end, and it hangs on David for a bit longer than it did everyone else. And I didn't notice until the second time I watched that it did that, and it just kind of hung on David. And then right after that was when Kevin drove up to the ranch, and his dad told him his brother died. So the first emotionally wrenching scene, and then the Michael one where he takes the pills and he goes out into the land on the farm and they have to look for him later. And then Carrie's moment also where he comes back for the gun that he gave his father that had meant so much and that he had tried to win some love and some approval from his father from. And it was so obvious that he didn't care as much about and ended up shooting himself with it. So many tragic moments that it was sad. It was happy afterwards to see that afterlife scene. One of my favorites, if not my favorite scene of the movie, where you see that brotherly love and connection again. And then the happiness that Kevin, even without his brothers, is able to sort of supersede that the curse and be able to create his family and create those familial bonds and create the love, unconditional love that he never got from his father, from his family. Right. Oh, yeah, that was what I was just going to say. The foreshadowing right before David's death. This was really interesting. I won't stick too long on it because I feel like it could get me into talking too much. I've already talked a lot, but I was leaving the theater the second time after I'd watched it. I'd still cried. I was still very, very emotional. And I was walking, and I was walking out behind this group of six guys who went to see the movie, probably students at one of the universities. I went to see it in Provo. I went to see it somewhere close to university, and I was walking out behind them. And they were talking, and I was there, like I said, emotionally devastated again. And one of the guys was like, oh, man, I'm so sorry, guys. I thought that was going to be good.
Really? He's apologizing because he didn't think it was good. Yeah. I thought he was going to apologize because it was sad.
No, I think, I don't know if that was like kind of why, but he was like, he said, and I was just like, what? And I didn't say anything, but he was like, yeah, I saw the trailer. I saw they were wrestling. I saw all this stuff. I thought it was going to be epic. So just like, I'm sorry,
like
guys.
Like sports, like Rocky movie.
Right.
Inspirational.
And it's like, I understand, like, everyone has different tastes, and I know that this can be, like, kind of not, like, artsy movie. There's definitely still a lot of wrestling in it, and even if it doesn't end up being, like, the messaging isn't just about wrestling specifically, it ends up being about these familiar relations and stuff. I was just like, is that like the problem? Is that you can go see that with your bros, right? Your buds. And you feel like you have to like apologize afterwards. Like, oh, dang, that wasn't the super cool action movie I thought it was, man. Like, again, I know like everyone can have their own tastes and everything like that. But I was just like, really? Like,
yeah, that surprises me too.
Like, I know everyone's not going to love everything. It's like, oh, yeah, I thought this was going to be good. And I thought it was going to be great. But sorry, guys. I was like, it made me really sad. And I was like, dang, I hope like kind of over time we can.
Yeah, it's kind of hard.
Because it's like, I would it's a moment taken from a conversation.
Yeah, and I would understand if they're going into it expecting a Rocky, you know, expecting the underdog to come out the hero on the other end and then walking in and getting this tragic death story drama. You know, I can understand going in and being like telling your bros, your friends, like, this is going to be awesome. We're going to be pumped up. We're going to walk out all excited and then just have this like downer of a movie and not being like in the right headspace
not
for
being
it.
Ready for that.
I can understand I can feel that too. Kind of disappointment. Yeah. I don't think that messes the quality of the it changes the quality of the movie, but some people just aren't looking for the quality. They're looking for the feeling.
The fun action.
Yeah. So,
and that's to be fair. Like, there are definitely like times where I'm not in the mood for something like that, right? If I'm at home, I'll see a movie that's been on my list for a while that I know is a deep emotional one, but I'm like, okay, I'm not like in that headspace right
now. Yeah, I can't watch
I can't really get into that, but... There's a lot that goes into it. I'll hit some quick interesting facts / final thoughts, and then I wanted to kind of wrap up with like the last scene in the movie and kind of what it means. Shot in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Very cool. And it actually kind of made sense with some of the shots. Like, it kind of felt sort of swampy at places, different times. I was like, oh, this is very cool. The ranch and everything. They shot basically everything there. And then Louisiana native band Lovers, LVVRS, were the ones who, when they were playing at that gig, were the ones playing and doing that song of Live That Way Forever, but with the actor, Michael, being the singing the words and everything like that. Again, the song that plays at the end.
Okay.
And then I already mentioned this, but the candle circle for the Zac Efron Oscar nomination. It started the second I freaking walked out of that movie, but it will continue, and I hope. I know there's so many good performances. There always are. Like, there's never a question like that. There's more people that deserve a nomination than get it because there's only limited slots.
Yeah.
People will always talk about the past and say, oh, these things, blah, 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 blah. Zac Efron, in a lot of the interviews I've seen, he owns his past, and he's not ashamed. He was like, oh, yeah, dude, High School Musical. He was like, that was some, like, great times. Like, I did a lot of things that helped me build up these different things in my acting career. Like, yeah, like, he's not, like, ashamed of it, right? And that's, like, you know, so much now we can be like, oh, dude, High School Musical way back then. Zac Efron is a serious actor, and it's time for people to recognize that and not say, because you were in High School Musical 15 years ago, you don't deserve an Oscar nomination. And I will die on the hill that I think that Zac Efron deserves an Oscar nomination this year. And I know he won't, but if it were Josh picked the winners so far, Zac Efron is my Oscar winner for best male actor performance in a leading role this year. Personal, I know it's not going to happen. I know Cillian Murphy is up there, and I don't discount Cillian Murphy's performance at all. I love it, and I'll probably be cheering for him to win because I know he's the one who really has a shot.
Mm-hmm.
My pick is Zac Efron. He does so much in this movie. And if you see it and you haven't seen it, which if you watch this much, I mean, do your thing. But just watch his facial expressions, his body movement, how well he controls himself in this character.
Mm-hmm.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
He's incredible. The final scene, Vince, I want to get your thoughts on that final moment of him playing with his boys, him crying with his boys, and into the outro.
I've said before in this podcast, family is very important to me. Don't have a family of my own yet, but I'm very much looking forward to having my own kids. My relationship with my father is very, very good. He's one of my best friends. You know, he's 30 years older than me. He's 70, but he still plays like he's in his 20s, you know. Me and him are close, and we see each other like a couple times a month. We're still going out on motorcycle rides. Like, he is my brother that I never had, mm-hmm. you know, because I have two sisters. I never had a brother myself. So I 100%, I was very touched by the line deliveries there, or by the writing of this last scene of
both
of, yeah, of this man who lost his brothers that he had and feeling like he's lost, but then having these two kids that he's growing up with. That's what I want, you know, in my life, you know, eventually that's what I'll have, is I'll have my own kids that will become my brothers, become my siblings, become my best friends, just like I have with my father. Hopefully. That's what I'm hoping. If everything works out right.
That's the dream.
That's what I'm shooting for. So like, yeah, that's kind of how life is. You know, people kind of come and go, but, you know, if you stick close to your family, you stick close with your friends, like there'll always be someone with you. There'll be always be someone that you can rely on and lean on, you know? And I think, yeah, the father-son relationship is a complicated thing, but it's a very important thing. It's a very meaningful relationship, no matter what you have, no matter what relationship you have with your father. Hopefully it's a good one, but it's always a very important relationship that you'll have.
Yeah. Relationship with fathers is definitely super important. A huge part of this movie, and there's so much that goes into it. This movie dives into so many different relationships and the love you get from your parents or your siblings or everything like that. But that final scene was truly touching and heartbreaking at the same time, right? That moment where he's watching his sons and he sees them playing and he sees how much they're enjoying being with each other and loving each other and playing football and all of this stuff. And the emotion just gets to him, right? We haven't seen him cry all movie, and we have assumed at times during his life he's cried, probably especially since he's decided to be more open and be with his family more, but we haven't actually seen him cry. And he sees his two sons playing. He thinks about playing football or
in his past
tubing
his
down brothers. The river with his brothers, and it just becomes too much, where he's told himself even now, I'm not going to cry in front of my sons, right? Like a man doesn't, you know, cry. A man doesn't cry, especially not in front of his sons. You shouldn't see me this way, he says to them. Because it just becomes too much. Because he feels that, and he just misses his brothers more than anything, you know. And it becomes too much. It boils over. His sons see him, and they come, and they talk to him. And they say, Dad, like, what's going on? Why are you crying? And then possibly the line of the movie, I don't know. You heard me say a million lines, and so many of them were touching, funny, or heartbreaking. And this one, I think, is probably the line of the movie and the one that sums it up when they say, well, do you know why you're sad, Dad? And he's like, well, it's because I used to be a brother, and I'm not a brother anymore. And it makes him sad. And like you said, they say, well, like, we'll be your brothers. Like, we'll be the ones to give you that love and to give you that connection. And he says, well, I appreciate that, boys. And then they go and they play and they're doing all that stuff. And the mom comes in with the dogs. The other part that I love, right? She's a vet and they always have the dogs around, yeah. The different dogs. One that definitely looked a lot like Diesel was one of their dogs that they had. And they go and they play and they pan out. And the other reason why I liked that final scene so much, just in my closing thoughts, was so much of this movie is about toxic masculinity and how we need to be mindful and make sure that we're not setting unreasonable expectations and all of this stuff. A lot of people take that in a super negative way. They say, well, you're just trying to turn people too soft, that they can't be strong and they can't do all of these different things. And this last scene, I think in a super subtle way, kind of subverts that expectation. They say, dude, these guys are out here playing, you know, they're playing football, they're tackling each other, they're still doing these manly things. You can show love and cry and be in those family relationships and be strong and still do these things, right? No one's telling you to not play football. No one's telling you to not wrestle. No one's telling you not to do these things. You can do these things and still be loving and still be gentle and still be a man. I think a lot of people say, and I think that's kind of what this movie is there's a lot of kind of changing notions about the way that people used to be parented and the way that a lot of things have happened. And the way that things are moving, a lot of people say, like, I wish you could go back to the old days, you know, beat your kids and like set them straight in ways. And there's a lot of like stuff that's changing. And, you know, everyone has their own parenting style and stuff like that happens. But it's a lot of the movie is about you can be masculine, you can do all these things, and you can be a
good father, and you can love your kids, and you can show and have those proper expectations. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what kind of hit hard really for me with a lot of different things. So you heard me talk a lot. There's a lot, a lot that I loved about this movie, and I've gone through everything, and I've kind of said it all. And you know that I love this movie so, so much. 5 stars. You'll have to find out where it is in my rankings.
Yeah.
Once we get to the next episode.
I'm going to guess.
You can kind of take a guess. It's probably off the list. Not that. But do you have any final thoughts, Vince, before we wrapped up this episode about the Iron Claw and as we head into our top 10? Any words?
I think you very thoroughly covered it. Thank you for like sharing all that with you and getting personal in there too. And like, and sharing a part of yourself that kind of taking a note from the movie and like not afraid to get emotional and let people know, you know, that this movie really does touch you, and that's okay to let people know. And that's okay to feel those emotions, you know? So thanks for, this is really fun for me to listen to too.
Well, thanks. Thanks for listening to me. I appreciate that. I feel like we have the friendship that, I mean, obviously this is going to go on the internet and anyone can watch it. And please don't degrade me in the comments if you don't like me crying. But I feel like that mostly, like when we do the podcast, you know, we put it out there and people can watch it. But I feel like it's always us talking. So I appreciate you being someone I feel like I could talk to that stuff about. So.
But yeah, other than that, like, check out the movie. It's really good.
The Iron Claw, baby.
Yeah, check it out.
That's it. All right. That's about it. Well, we'll go ahead and we'll wrap it up. This has been another episode of the Pause, Rewind, Play podcast. Thank you so much if you've listened to it with us this whole way. We really appreciate it. Drop your comments if you've seen the movie down below about what your favorite part of the movie, or if you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, pull up our Instagram or our YouTube and check it out and let us know your thoughts about the movie. And also, like we said, we've got our next episode coming up will be our top 10 movies of 2023, one of my personal favorites. So
a fun one.
In preparation for that, post any of your favorite movies. If you have a list, let us know. If you don't, just say, hey, these were some of my favorite movies that you guys should either check out, or I hope that these are on your list as well, because I'm looking forward to it. You know, I love this episode because I was so excited to talk about this movie. But the next one will be even better. Thanks so much for checking out this episode of the Pause, Rewind, Play podcast. Check us out on our socials, and we'll catch you next time.